KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
8 o'clock, cloudy, windy, and 25 degrees in Atlantic. We look for it to be cloudy and breezy here today with a high of 32. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 70 years. In Western Iowa news, a Sioux City High School administrator has resigned following his arrest on suspicion of drunken driving. A trial is scheduled to begin April 9th for 47-year-old Dale Veach. He's pleaded not guilty to misdemeanor charges of drunken driving and lacking registration for his vehicle. An Iowa State trooper stopped Veach for a broken headlight on January 20th. A court affidavit said Veach failed field sobriety tests and recorded a blood alcohol content of nearly twice the legal limit in a breath test. Veach has been a school activities director at the West High School. District spokeswoman Allison Benson said Veach's resignation is effective June 30th. News time is 8:01.
Shop Robinson's True Value Hardware, your oldest downtown hardware store in Atlantic. They've been providing the same dependable quality service and quality merchandise for over 70 years at the same location. So come down to Robinson's True Value for all of your hardware needs. They've got paint for any surface and hardware for any purpose. And for all of your shipping and packaging needs, they ship via UPS. That's Robinson True Value Hardware Store at 325 Chestnut in downtown Atlantic. Or give them a call at 243-4667.
More school districts in Iowa are looking at a new approach to training for possible shooting. A new program is called ALICE, or Alert, Lockdown, Inform, Counter, and Escape. We've told you about it before here on KJAN. It teaches students and teachers to try and escape a shooter or confront them if needed instead of just locking the doors and waiting for police to arrive. Atlantic School District Superintendent Mike Amstein said during a school board meeting last month that he'd received information about the program from local authorities, but to date, no action has been taken on acquiring a trainer for the program. Newton School Superintendent Steve McDermott talked with school board members this week about ALICE and plans to coordinate emergency plans with other districts in Jasper County. McDermott said at least two other districts in the county are pursuing ALICE training, although he concedes it has raised questions.
There are some schools that are concerned that we're training staff or students to target and attack an active shooter. Well, that's certainly not the first priority, or the second or the third. However, if you do come in contact with that person, then we feel like folks need to have some sort of a plan.
There are trainers for the program in Jasper County, and McDermott said using them is the best way to implement the program.
This isn't somebody coming in from another state to do this training. These are local people that understand the potential here for certain incidents, and so I think that'll help us with that. But we'll be very careful with that one in particular. Also, I want you to understand that of all the ages of students we have, we'll have to be developmentally appropriate. This will be different for a kindergartner than it will be for a fourth grader, and it will be different for a ninth grader in certain situations.
McDermott says the Newton District will need to practice emergency plans more than in the past and practice them in a way that will not scare children. Eldridge Police Chief Dave Kilpatrick said recently in a conference call with Congressman Dave Loebsack that his department is training staff in the North Scott School District in the ALICE program. Other districts in eastern Iowa are also getting that training. A tornado shelter will be built at Burlington High School to give students and the community a safe place to retreat in a severe storm. The 8,600-square-foot room will cost $1.67 million. The district will pay $643,000 out of that, with state and federal funds paying the rest. In addition to a tornado shelter, school officials want to use the room for wrestling and cardiovascular activities. The Burlington School Board has been talking about the safe room for nearly 3 years, and if the Federal Emergency Management Agency approves, construction could begin within days and be completed in November. The school board approved the bid from a construction company out of Sperry on Monday. Trial has been scheduled next year for a Penn National Gaming Company's lawsuit against the co-holder of its gambling license for the Argosy Floating Casino in Sioux City. The Sioux City Journal says the trial is scheduled to begin April 4th, 2014, on the lawsuit filed in September of last year. Penn National Iowa subsidiary Bell of Sioux City said Missouri River Historical Development violated the terms of their operating agreement, and Penn National and the nonprofit historical group jointly hold a gambling license. The Iowa Racing and Gaming Commission is expected to announce April 18th its choice from four proposals to replace the Argosy with a land-based casino. An Iowa congressman who had been considered the establishment Republican choice for a seat vacated by retiring Democratic Senator Tom Harkin says he won't seek the job. Tom Latham said in a statement Wednesday that he will not run for Harkin's seat in 2014. The 10-term Republican from Clive said he could not in good conscience launch a 2-year statewide campaign that will detract from the commitment to the new district he was elected to in November. Attention now turns to U.S. Representative Steve King of Chiron. King, a conservative from northwest Iowa, has said that he is weighing a Senate bid. He wasn't expected to challenge Latham in the primary. Democratic Representative Bruce Braley, a 4-term House member from Waterloo, is the only announced Democrat for the seat. Lawmakers in the state, our House and Senate, are miles apart when it comes to their budget goals. Governor Terry Branstad last month put out a $6.5 billion plan for the fiscal year that starts July the 1st. On Wednesday, leaders in the Republican majority House called for spending less money, and the Democratic-controlled Senate sought to spend more. Based on their target budget numbers, the House wants to spend about $6.4 billion and the Senate $6.9 billion. Both sides say their plans meet the state requirement not to spend more than 99% of revenue. Republicans say they want to focus on keeping expenses down, while Democrats say they want to make investments to improve programs. More details will be revealed as lawmakers work on precise proposals in committee. A Democratic effort to expand Medicaid in Iowa is moving forward, but Governor Branstad remains firm in his opposition. Democrats in the Senate Human Resources Committee yesterday approved a proposal to expand the state's Medicaid program. Under the plan, a Medicaid eligibility limit would be raised to 138% of the federal poverty level, or about $15,400 annually for an individual. Branstad has opposed such an expansion, and instead wants to seek a federal waiver to continue IowaCare. That's a program that provides limited benefits to 70,000 low-income adults using state and federal funds. That program is set to expire by the end of the year. If Medicaid is expanded, as many as 150,000 people could be added to Iowa's rolls, including those on IowaCare. A report from the Center for Rural Affairs finds those giant wind turbines that dot the farmland skyline are helped to power distant cities and not rural homes. Jonathan Holodick, the center's energy policy advocate, said major power lines are not connected to the areas where the wind power is generated.
We're finding that all of the important big transmission lines that can move a lot of capacity, the kind of capacity we need, are far away from the rural areas that are home to all of our wind turbines.
Iowa ranks third in the nation for wind energy production behind Texas and California. Under the old model of generation, power plants were located close to the population areas they serve. Now utilities are finding it difficult to locate new plants in heavily populated areas. Lodick said the study found that only a few miles of the modern major power lines are located close to the wind turbines.
Only 6% of the lines 400 kilovolts and above are located in the top 10 states for wind energy potential. And most of those states, as you know, are in the upper Midwest and the Great Plains area. But even more importantly, less than 1% of the lines over 600 kilovolts are located in these areas. That's only 9 miles.
Lodick said making a more efficient use of infrastructure now in place is a critical first step, and to make major improvements, it will take some creative partnerships.
It's not only the job of individual utilities and public utility commissions in each state to recognize the problem and to recognize what we need to do to tap our wind resources, but the onus also falls on states working together, on regional collaboratives.
The utilities need to come up with plans to move more power over a more efficient energy grid, he said, to ensure a clean future and more jobs. The Center for Rural Affairs is based in Lyons, Nebraska. You can learn more about that wind energy report at www.cfra.org. And the Iowa Department of Natural Resources says it will host public meetings over the Iowa Communications Network, or ICN, on March the 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. to listen to your thoughts on hunting and trapping regulations for this fall. Meetings are part of the new process instituted for making rules in government. Dr. Dale Garner, chief of the Wildlife Bureau, says any rule changes must be discussed with Iowa citizens who might be impacted by those changes before the rule changes are proposed. The new process helps to ensure that rule changes serves the public wishes and do not impact Iowa's economy. Meetings will be held in several communities, including Council Bluffs, Creston, and Sac City here in western Iowa. You can find out more at www.iowadnr.gov/hunting. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, in just a few hours, Pope Benedict will leave the Vatican for retirement. Shortly before 5 p.m. local time, he'll leave the palace and board a helicopter that will take him to the papal retreat south of Rome. 3 hours later, he'll become the first pontiff in 600 years to resign. On Monday, cardinals are expected to begin meeting to set the date for the conclave to select a new pope. The Obama administration will provide the Syrian opposition with an additional $60 million in non-lethal aid, like food and medical supplies, in their fight to topple President Bashar Assad. Secretary of State John Kerry announced the decision to back the rebel fighters today, saying, "No nation, no people should live in fear of their so-called leaders." Both Republicans and Democrats in the Senate don't expect their dueling budget proposals to get very far when they're expected to vote on them today. They've each drafted their own alternative measures to replace the $85 billion in military and domestic program cuts set to take effect tomorrow. Meanwhile, President Obama has invited congressional leaders to the White House tomorrow to discuss the latest budget crisis. News time is 8:11.
Shop Robinson's True Value Hardware, your oldest downtown hardware store in Atlantic. They've been providing the same dependable quality service and quality merchandise for over 70 years at the same location. So come down to Robinson's True Value for all of your hardware needs. They've got paint for any surface and hardware for any purpose. And for all of your shipping and packaging needs, they ship via UPS. That's Robinson True Value Hardware Store at 325 Chestnut in downtown Atlantic. Or give them a call at 243-4667.
In the funeral announcements, Michael Schechinger, age 74 of Westphalia, died Saturday at his home. A massive Christian burial service for Michael Schechinger will be this morning at 10 o'clock at the St. Boniface Catholic Church in Westphalia. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan is in charge of the arrangements. Norman Cox, age 87 of Grimes and formerly of Panora, died Sunday at his home. Services for Norman Cox will be today at 11 o'clock at the Faith Bible Church in Panora. Twig Funeral Home in Panora has arrangements. Ross Armentrout, age 94 of Red Oak and formerly of Griswold, died Sunday at the Montgomery County Hospital. Funeral services for Ross Armentrout will be this afternoon at 1:30 at the Griswold United Methodist Church. Dune Funeral Home in Griswold has arrangements. Eileen Haynes of Oakland died February 21st at the Oakland Manor. Funeral services for Eileen Haynes will be held tomorrow at 10:30 at the Oakland United Methodist Church. Reconvene Funeral Home in Oakland has arrangements. Craig Cullen, age 53 of Greenfield, died February 20th in Des Moines. A gathering of remembrance for Craig Cullen will be held Friday from 4 until 8 p.m. in the 4-H building on the Adair County Fairgrounds in Greenfield. Steen Funeral Home of Greenfield has arrangements. Joanne Gravy, age 78 of Erling, died Wednesday at Murtu Medical Center. A massive Christian burial service for Joanne Gravy will be Saturday at 11 o'clock at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Erling. Pauly Jones Funeral Home in Harlan is in charge of the arrangements. Norman Henriksen, age 86 of Atlantic, died February 21st at the Heritage House. Funeral services for Norman Henriksen will be Saturday at 11 a.m. at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Atlantic. Auchenberry Family Care in Atlantic has the arrangements. And Robert Krauth, age 75 of Messina, died Wednesday at the Banner Heart Hospital in Mesa, Arizona. Memorial services for Robert Krauth will be held at a later date in Messina, with the Steen Funeral Home of Messina in charge of arrangements. The news and funeral announcements were brought to you by Robinson True Value Hardware, serving Southwest Iowa with the best hardware for over 70 years. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.